In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 13th of January, year of our Lord, 2026. Well, another day, another war from Trump. This time, it's another domestic war, and he's gone to war with Fed Chairman Powell. And look, I'm not making excuses for the outrageous cost, $2.5 billion for remodeling. That's obviously over the top, but it's just the tip of the iceberg with the Federal Reserve, isn't it? We're going to audit the building remodeling of the Fed, but we're not going to audit the Fed itself. And we're not going to audit Fort Knox's gold either. Isn't that interesting? Yeah, there should be a criminal investigation, but we all know that what is really behind this is just another crime. It's just more of Trump wanting to consolidate control into the Oval Office. And it's not going to just be control for him. It'll be control for the next Obama, the next Biden, the next Hillary. That control will be there. We're also going to take a look at the state of Trump's foreign wars. He says he's only limited by his own morality. We don't have any limits then, I guess, with that. And today is our 46th wedding anniversary. Happy anniversary, Karen. Yeah, time is passing quickly. Silver threads among the gold, right? Let's take a look at the Federal Reserve War that is happening here. And we got all over the business press, everybody is wringing their hands about Fed independence. And it's like, yeah, I want independence from, you know, there's only one way that you can get independence from the Fed, buy gold. And the nice thing about that is you can do it incrementally. You know, Trump is also talking about pulling some levers to try to make, it remains to be seen if his strategy would work. He's talking about different authoritarian central planning issues to try to make homes more affordable without fixing the biggest problem that is making life unaffordable for us, and that is the federal government, its taxing and its spending. He's not going to do anything about that. Instead, he'll try to finesse it with interest rates or this or that. The reality is, though, that you can gradually start to accumulate wealth, not with real estate, which you have to buy in a really large chunk all at once, but you can do it a little bit at a time. Tony's got Wise Wolf Gold, and goes the Wolf Pack lets you start to save in currency that's going to retain its value. And we're going to talk about that because gold had a big day yesterday. Silver had an even bigger day because of the chaos, because of the central planning, because of the stupid economics behind these policies. So, again, as I said at the beginning, rather than ending the Fed, he wants to end the Fed chairman. As if that's going to make any difference. We're going to audit the building expenses, which, how in the world do you justify spending $2.5 billion on a couple of buildings? That's it. That's what we're talking about, two buildings, you know, over $1 billion each. And we're not talking about building the buildings. We're talking about remodeling them. I think it is a shrewd move on Trump's part to focus on that kind of waste and opulence. What are they doing? Lining it with gold that they took out of Fort Knox? I don't know. Trump's gotten a lot of criticism, I think justifiably so, for gilding the Oval Office for this ballroom thing that is happening there. But that pales in comparison to what the Federal Reserve is doing, and he knows that. And so that's a good way to inoculate himself against these charges of opulence. Of course, he's got a lot of insider trading and a lot of backroom deals and corruption that are going on as well. So, but anyway, I think it is a smart political move. The stock market shrug, it affected it early on in the day, but then it had new highs at the end of the day after this war with Jerome Powell. It looked like it was going to resuscitate the what they call the Sell America trade, which began last summer in response to Trump's stupid economic policies of tariffs and what it was going to do to the dollar. But that only happened at the beginning of the day. Ultimately, the Dow gained 86 points. Stocks rebounded. The dollar remained under pressure, weakened against other major currencies. It's unusual for stocks, bonds, and the dollar to fall in tandem. So the initial overnight market moves caught Wall Street's attention. While the stock market largely stabilized by Monday afternoon, investors will be keen to see whether stocks hold their ground. Meanwhile, gold rallied sharply. Gold futures gained 2.5%, hitting a record high above $4,600 an ounce. Silver surged 7.3%, outpacing even gold and going up to $86 an ounce. So the stock market investors are now shrugging off the Justice Department's investigation into Powell. Investors might think efforts to undermine the Fed's independence will fail. But the surge in gold and silver paired with pressure on the dollar and treasury bills is a sign that Wall Street is bracing for volatility in U.S. markets. That's right. You know, there's a common thread in everything that Trump is doing, especially domestically. It's all about consolidation and centralization of power, and not just into Washington, into the office of the presidency. And that's true whether we're talking about law enforcement or whether we're talking about economic central planning. There's bad economic outcomes from his policies as well, like his tariffs, like his interest rates. He wants to lower interest rates. Well, that's going to increase inflation. That's why we've had the record year in gold. And that's why this year, I said this last year, I said, I think these statements coming out of the various banks like Bank of America, JP Morgan, all the rest of them, $4,600 sometime by the second quarter or whatever. I think that's very, very conservative. Because the policies, nothing has fundamentally changed. It's what we're talking about, not this Christmas, but last Christmas when we had the Yukon Cornelius thing. It's like everybody was so excited, Trump is going to make cryptocurrency go sky high. Well, he did for himself. He put out some junk meme coins, Trump coin, Melania coin, all the rest of the stuff. He made out like a bandit because he is a bandit, and a lot of people lost a lot of money on that pump and dump. But I said the fundamentals that have been driving gold and silver up are only going to be worse in 2025. And I say they're only going to be worse in 2026. And of course, a lot of this that made me certain it was going to be this way in 2026 was Powell, who was going to be leaving in May. And Powell has resisted Trump's urge to lower interest rates, and that's going to be inflationary. And so Trump desperately wants him out. And notice the kind of tactics that he uses. He wants to get rid of Lisa Cook, one of the board of governors, because she's opposing the economic policies that Trump has. And so, you know, we don't even have to debate whether the policies are right or wrong, but it's looking at the tactics that he uses. So he goes back and he audits Lisa Cook and says, well, I've got some issues here with a mortgage you took out years ago. He's got his guy there at, where is he? FHA, I think Pulte is. And he used AI to go back and audit this. Think about that. Think about that. It gives all new meaning to Stalin's bring me the man and I'll find the crime. When you got AI to go back through mountains of data and sort through it and sift through it, it can find that needle in the haystack for anybody. I mean, this is makes Harvey Silverglate's book, Three Felonies a Day, pale in comparison. You know, he talked about how complicated and complex the laws are and how people are violating obscure laws that they don't even know exist. I remember the case of a couple who on their anniversary, the husband took her to the beach and he released some balloons, some helium balloons that were part of the celebration or whatever. He got charged with a felony. I didn't know that was a felony, that type of thing. Well, guess what? AI is going to go back and find all those little things in people's lives. If you are an interesting person, as Michael Hayden said, Michael Hayden, the guy who was head of the CIA, head of the NSA, he said, we're not interested in people in general. We're interested in interesting people. And we will go back and look at them very carefully using AI. So that's what we're looking at. But the other things that you see that are characteristics of Trump, whether you're talking about foreign policy, the military, well, let's take it up to $1 trillion. That's record. And then immediately after a record budget of over $1 trillion for the military, immediately wants to jump it up to $1.5 trillion, growing by leaps and bounds. So it's the rapid expansion of debt, which we saw in 2020, he had no problem doing with the COVID bills and things like that. That's where he first ran into conflict with Thomas Massie, when Thomas Massie said, we can't just throw $3.5 trillion out here. And if we're going to do that, I want everybody to come back to Washington. Well, that made him very hated, not just by Trump, but by the Washington establishment. So this rapid expansion of debt, and we could see that the cumulative debt of the government was going up at a pretty rapid rate as it was rising. And then when Trump did all this stuff in 2020, the slope of the curve went straight up and starts going up very, very rapidly. And interestingly enough, Biden maintained that same slope of spending. So Trump set the precedent and Biden continued it. And this is what's so dangerous about everything that Trump is doing in terms of usurping power into the office of the presidency. The Democrats will keep that and build on that. Just like Biden didn't just build on the new rapid accumulation of debt, Biden built on the idea that Trump put out there that he could do gun control by executive order in violation of the Second Amendment. It used to be that you had to have Congress to violate the Second Amendment or the Supreme Court or whatever. Now I'm going to do it just by executive fiat. Well, Biden kept that precedent and expanded it. Well, rapid increases in the price of gold and dollars is another hallmark of a Trump administration. Remember, Gerald Celente said, you know, Trump was really good for gold in his first term, and he was. He's going to be even better for gold in his second term, and he's looking even better. So the issue is, why is lowering of the Fed rates really not lowered home mortgages? And that's a whole nother thing that we'll talk about what Trump is doing here. It's because the long-term mortgage rates, like a home mortgage that's 30 years, not 50 years. That's another idiotic, quote-unquote, solution from Trump. But when you look at a long-term rate like 30 years, that's set by the market. You can go out and do by fiat, you can say, well, here's going to be the interest rate that we're going to charge banks or whatever. You can change by decree. I think we ought to stop calling it the fiat dollar. I think we should call it the decree dollar, because I like alliteration, which the decree dollar is the death of the dollar. That's really what we're looking at here. But when you look at the actual mortgage rates, those are going to be set by a competitive market. You know, when you refinance a home, you shop around, right? Because not everybody has the same rate. But the Fed, just by decree, will set the rate that they're going to pay the banks. But that doesn't necessarily percolate through to everything else. So as I point out in this article here, they said lower rates can lead to lower credit card rates and borrowing costs for consumers. But a central bank that lowers rates too quickly without regard to inflation can spook investors who begin to worry that inflation could run rampant, thus demand a higher return for the risk of investing in American assets. And that's why when the Fed has lowered interest rates, the Fed rate, that's why we've seen the mortgage rates either stay the same or go up in the opposite direction. So the decree dollar is looking really bad at this point. Sunday and early Monday's trades were more muted echo of the Sell America trade from the spring of 2025, when fear of Trump tariffs sent investors pouring out of American assets. That sent bonds and dollar tumbling and stocks an inch away from a bear market in April before recovering sharply through the end of 2025 after Trump backed off of some of the tariff threats. We think the Sell America trade may gather pace and will even have legs, with Fed independence risk a key theme throughout 26, said the chairman of Evercore. The surge in precious metals like gold and silver amid renewed threats of the Fed's independence is also reflective of what Wall Street has dubbed the debasement trade. Investors pile into hard assets like gold and silver, which are not beholden to the reputation of a government or an institution, because of worries that the currency and bonds tied to this nation, in this particular case, the U.S. But this is an issue in every single country. That's the thing that's really worrying about the time that we live in. When you look at every single one of the Western nations, they're all involved heavily in deindustrialization because of this green grift that's going on. But they're also heavily, heavily involved in debt. And this is the background, the backdrop for why they desperately want war. When you look at what they're doing, whether you're talking about Germany, France, the UK, or America, or Russia, any of them, they all want war. Why? Well, because they see what is happening domestically. That's why the Trump's saber-rattling in the wake of domestic unrest in Iran is so stupid. Because all that does is strengthen the hand of the domestic leaders against a foreign enemy. This has always been the mechanism of dictators and charlatans who are hurting their own people. They create another enemy, either somebody within the country or somebody outside the country, usually both of those. Well, Trump is doing that, and you've got the other European countries, the other part of NATO, they're all doing that as well. So this is where we are at this point in time. So Trump favors government control of interest rates, writes the New American. Trump took to his Ministry of Truth Social last week to support a one-year 10% cap on credit card interest rates. I should be playing at this point in time the Admiral Akbar clip. It's a trap! This is the same kind of come on that you get, change your debt over to this credit card company. We'll give you low interest rates for a year or whatever. Then it's going to skyrocket. So this is really a debt trap more than anything else. It's not fixing the bad or the lack of usury laws in the United States at all. Trump did not explicitly say whether he was simply asking Congress to use the power of the federal government to implement this price control, or whether he intended to simply make a law to that effect by issuing a presidential executive order. I think that he's going to do an executive order because he gave a time certain. He said, by such and such, we're going to do, and he gave the date, we're going to do a one-year moratorium on credit card rates, and we're going to cap them, not moratorium, but we're going to cap them at 10%. And that happens to be the one-year anniversary of his inauguration. So I think it's going to be an executive order. He claims that everything is an emergency, so he's going to say this is an emergency as well. He said, we will no longer let the American public be ripped off by credit card interest rates. Well, I looked into the history of usury and these rates because if you've listened to this program for very long, that is a pet peeve of mine. The massive spread between what the banks get their money for when they borrow it from the Fed and what they charge people when they lend it out and what they pay on savings and the criminal interest rates that they charge on credit cards. I've talked about that for a long time. And so you would think I'd be 100% behind this. But the reality is that this is just sheer demagoguery. And it is a debt trap for people as well. So I was really surprised to learn that there was never a federal usury law. I thought there was. We had the rapid inflation of the 1970s, the late 1970s. I was still in college and my head was in the engineering books. I wasn't paying too much attention to news, politics, and economics at the time, but my dad did. And I remembered that happening and I just kind of vaguely, they changed this and that. And so now they're going to remove this restriction of a 10% interest rate. How did that happen? Well, there was no federal law, no federal usury law. However, we had a tradition in Western civilization, especially in England, going back to the 1500s, there were laws that would limit interest rates to between 6 to 10%. And if you charge more than that, it was considered to be a crime. And what happened in America was, of course, government in America was primarily state government. The states created the central government, and the states handled pretty much everything except for the common defense. That was really the main reason that they created a federal government, was for defense purposes. And so the laws about what were legal interest rates were pretty much state laws. And what happened in 1978, you had a Supreme Court case that said, and there was a lot of economic pressure for this because we had very, very high interest rates. As a matter of fact, as I said, we got married, today is our 46th anniversary, we got married in 1980 when we bought a house in 1980 because both of us had had jobs. When we bought a house, we had a 13% fixed interest rate. Like I said, I wasn't paying too much attention to economics at the time. were trends. And so we got slammed with that. And that was not a good decision. Would not do that. I wish I could go back and talk to my younger self. It's one of those many things. One of the many things I would change. But a 13% fixed rate on a home mortgage. And it got higher than that. Before they started coming down, it got up to 16%, I think. I saw some people had, but we had the one that was 13%. And so there was a lot of pressure to get rid of this 10% cap. And by 1980, they had gotten rid of it. But how it happened was first the Supreme Court came in and said, well, since this is done by states, we're going to say that the governing rule here is going to be what is the legal interest rate to charge in the state where you are headquartered. It's one of the reasons why Delaware, the criminal state of Delaware, is so popular with corporations. You know, Joe Biden's state. People could go there and they didn't have a cap or it was very, very high. I don't know what it was. But Delaware that was a big draw for Delaware. If you were headquartered in Delaware, incorporated in Delaware, not headquartered, but incorporated in Delaware, then according to the 1978 Supreme Court decision, you could charge whatever you wanted to in every other state. Then what happened in 1980 was the Congress came in with a law. In 1980, they had the Deregulation and Monetary Control Act. And what that did was, by an act of Congress, not by changing the Constitution, but an unconstitutional act by Congress. Why is it unconstitutional? Well, because the 10th Amendment makes it very clear that any powers not specifically delegated to the states are retained by the states and by the people. And so just like the definition of marriage, for example, or the definition of when life begins, this was a usurpation by the courts to say, we will decide what that is. Well, you don't have the authority to decide that. And then the Congress jumped in with the 1980 Act. Again, no branch of the federal government, not the Supreme Court, not the Congress, and not the presidency has the right to set interest rates. That is not in the Constitution. And so with the Deregulation and Monetary Control Act of 1980, they overrode pretty much all of the state usury laws. And they extended these exemptions to secondary things, not just to things coming from the banks, but also to other corporations and credit lenders and things like that. So yet again, we see the example that centralized government, rather than being protective, centralized government always becomes a tool of special interest and corruption. These people do whatever their corporate donors and patrons want them to do. And so in this particular case, rather than there was never a situation where the federal government was protecting people from usury, what the federal government's role in the interest rates was to expose us to usury and to institutionalize it with both the Federal Reserve and the banks that they work hand in glove with. And so, again, the presidency, Trump doesn't have the authority over the interest rates. Congress doesn't. The Supreme Court doesn't on these credit cards, and they shouldn't have it. But when we look at this, and as I said, you know, we look at these issues, I really hate the high interest rates and the exploitation that is involved in it. And it is, I think, a form of debtor's prison. You know, we're all familiar with Charles Dickens and how many times he talked about debtor's prison. As a matter of fact, it was the central theme of one of his stories, Little Dorrit. And the character that was in that, the father that was in that, was put in the same debtor's prison that Charles Dickens' father had been put in. And it's amazing to me how similar the credit card trap is to these debtors' prisons that we saw with that. And that was a key issue with him because of his father being in prison. His father spent many years in debtors' prison over a 40-pound bill that was unpaid to a baker. Not banker, but a baker of cookies or whatever. Got a debtors' prison over those Keebler elf cookies. But boy, they were good. Can't pay for them, but anyway, that's where we are right now. So the credit card companies oppose the plan. Surprise, surprise. Yeah, again, we've had centuries of wise moral policy that has been overturned by central government, the federal government. It was always considered to be loan sharking because companies are charging interest rates of 20 to 30% on these credit cards. And here's the argument from the credit card companies, amazingly. Major credit card companies oppose the move, arguing that any such interest rate ceiling would hurt lower income Americans the most. They were so concerned about lower income Americans that they charged them 20 to 30% so they can never get out of debt. I mean, they're like the mafia, you know. This is, you shouldn't. If I can't charge this guy 50% interest and break his legs and he doesn't pay, that's going to hurt this guy. It's like, I think you're the one hurting him. The credit card companies and the big banks argue that lowering interest rates on their credit cards would lead to fewer cards being issued to high-risk borrowers. That's the idea. That would be a good thing. If you can't pay it back, you don't need a line of credit. Of course, the federal government wouldn't understand that. Not with a $38 trillion credit card that they can't pay off. So again, like I said, this is the 21st century equivalent of debtor's prison. Never going to get out of it. And yet, the new American sees this as a form of price control. I understand that argument, and I'm not for wage and price controls, which is, you know, what Richard Nixon tried to do in order to keep inflation under control. But some have described debtor's prison as less about punishment for a crime and more about a cruel, profit-driven system that pummeled poverty itself, punished it, right? And so it is a cruel, profit-driven system that we're talking about here. This is not a marketplace. Let's understand that we don't have a marketplace in these things anymore. You know, it isn't like just take a look at home mortgages, for example, especially in the context of a situation like, It's a Wonderful Life, where you've got competition. You know, you've got the savings and loan, and then you got Mr. Potter, right? So there's competition on the rates. He doesn't like that. He wants to have a monopoly on homes, and he can charge people whatever he wants at that point in time. And that really is where we are right now. We don't have a system of competition. We have a system of collusion between big government and these corporations. Just take a look at these interest rates that we have there, for example. You know, we have a massive spread, and in a sense, it's kind of a debtor's prison, you know. If you fall back on some of your payments, your credit rating will drop, and then they'll add like another 5 to 10% on the already confiscatory interest rates that are there. So you got people who are struggling to pay, and instead what they do is they jack up the interest rates on this. And so I see this as systematic. I see it as structurally immoral, structurally exploitative. In the same way, the banks are no longer paying interest on savings accounts, and how they have maintained this massive spread between the mortgage rates that they charge you if you buy a house and what they pay you on your savings account. If you go back to the 1950s, and I remember going back and doing this research when people said, oh, look at this, interest rates dropped down to 5% at one point in time. That's the lowest that we've seen since like the 1950s or whatever at that point in time. I thought, well, what do they pay people on savings accounts? Rather than a tiny, tiny fraction of 1%, they were paying people 4% on the savings accounts while they were charging people 5% on home mortgages. So it was like a 1% spread. That's not what we're seeing right now. These banks, especially when you go back and look at what happened in 2008 and so forth, they're getting their loans. In the wake of 2008, they were getting their loans at 0% interest. Yet, what were they charging people, right? The home loans were going like 4 to 6% for the next 8 years, 7 years, from 2008 to 2015. And when you look at the credit card rates that were there, the credit card rates, even though the banks were getting their money from the Federal Reserve at 0%, and that was the other thing they were telling everybody. Yeah, we got bailed out, but we paid that all back. You paid it all back with money that you got at 0% interest from the Federal Reserve. I don't see that as paying it back. you were given the money for free from the Federal Reserve, and you paid off your, quote-unquote, paid off your debt. Anyway, they were getting the money for 0%, and the credit card rates were 13, 15% or whatever. They've skyrocketed up from that as well. So all of this is criminal. So again, it used to be they had a spread of 1%, not 4 to 6% on the home loans. And then when you look at the interest rate spread that they had on credit cards, they'd get the money for 0%, loan it out on the credit cards for 13 to 14%. Well, they're getting it at 0%. It's absolutely criminal. And so I don't see it as a situation of wage and price controls. You know, they look at it and say, well, this is distorting the market. I'm sorry, there isn't a market when you're talking about banks and when you're talking about federal regulation. That there's the whole idea of it being a marketplace sailed a long time ago. That ship is not at port anymore. So lenders with high interest rates are typically accused of predatory lending, and I just laid it out. Why? They get the money at 0%, and if they loan it to you for a real estate loan, 4 to 6%. They give it to you on a credit card, 13 to 14%. They got it for nothing. It didn't cost them anything. And so that is predatory. And they say here, if a free people determine the price in the free market, well, we can all talk about those hypotheticals, just like we can always talk about the hypothetical, what if the federal government obeyed the Constitution? Can you imagine what that would look like? It looked like nothing like today. They don't obey the Constitution on anything. Another concern about Trump's proposal is that if he were to actually impose the controls, as did Emperor Diocletian, via presidential executive order, it would be a gross violation of the Constitution and its separation of powers. They're right about that. Executive orders by a president are to enforce existing law, not to make law. And that's one of the hallmarks of the Trump administration this first year. Executive order after executive order after executive order, all of them over phony emergencies, claiming that there's an emergency. So now he can usurp the power that he doesn't have to address an emergency that doesn't exist. He's not the commander in chief. He is the liar and thief. This is what Trump is. So UBS explains why Trump's 10% credit card rate cap is unlikely to happen. And again, it would only be for 1 year. So it'd be a trap, I think, for many people. But they said it would take an act of Congress for rate caps like this to be put in place. By the way, authority for which they really don't have any authority. Something that could be done right now by the states and challenge the usurpation of power by the Congress and probably by the Supreme Court. So you'd probably lose, but you know, it's one of these things. It's a fight worth having anyway. Credit card rate caps were discussed but failed to be included in the 2025 Genius Act, which suggests that the industry lobby has made an impact. Well, you know, we've had this last year, we've had the Genius Act, and we've had the Genesis Act. The Genesis Act was to clear the decks and give everything to the big technocracy, the AI people that they wanted. The Genius Act was to do the same thing for crypto. The industries that are favored by Trump because they are his donors. He tweeted out, all uppercase, affordability. Effective January the 20th, 2026, I, as President of the United States, am calling for a one-year cap on the credit card interest rates of 10%. That's why I say I think he intends to do it by fiat, by decree, by executive order, as the king, or I should say the Caligula, right? Neo-Caligula, I think that's who this guy really is. The cap's proposed state date coincides with the anniversary of Trump's second term inauguration, and if implemented, would fulfill his 2024 election campaign pledge. Well, again, it is sheer demagoguery, and it is a debt trap. Meanwhile, he's looking at a Supreme Court ruling on the tariffs that everybody is believing is going to be unfavorable to him because of the arguments that were heard and the statements that were made by the Supreme Court justices questioning this. It looks like they don't believe that he has the authority, which he doesn't have, to do this. And so Trump has issued a grave warning saying, we're screwed. if the Supreme Court strikes down his tariff bonanza. Think about this. Think of the mindset of this guy. As I said for the longest time, this is one of the best examples of how you can tell that Trump is a New York City Democrat, tax and spend liberal pedophile, you know, covering up for Jeffrey Epstein after hanging out with him, and then thinking that the way to prosperity is through taxing and spending money. And so, he wants to, the tariffs are really a stupid game for stupid players. So he lies about the emergencies. He violates the Constitution, usurps power, and then he throws this out, and he creates chaos in the marketplace. And it's created chaos and bankruptcy for businesses, small, medium, and large, especially the small businesses, and for retail as well as for manufacturing. Simply because it doesn't really matter what the economic policy is. He's changed it constantly. And so here he's saying that it's going to be just horrific if the Supreme Court comes in and changes his tariffs. He spent the entire year changing his tariffs on a whim. If he had a bad phone call with the leader of China, okay, you're getting over 100% tariffs. Just temper tantrums, narcissism, ego. That was the yardstick by which you could look at the tariffs that were there. It made absolutely no sense. He punished people with whom we had a trade surplus. But while this was all happening, he completely ignores the actual cumulative deficit of $38 trillion, which is far, far, far more important and consequential economically than any of these trade deficits that are there. But again, he drives many businesses out of business with a chaos. And now he claims that the effects are just going to be too big. If you change what he finally settled on, the effects are going to be too big and too catastrophic, and they can't comply with it, and they don't know who paid them the money and all the rest of the stuff. Really? You had the dog eat your tariff records? Is that what happened? I mean, he doesn't even have a dog in the White House. One of the few presidents that doesn't have a dog. But and again, a lot of them put the dog there just trying to humanize themselves to the people. But he doesn't care about looking human. And so what happened to all the records? You can't tell who you got this money from and who you got to pay it back to? Give me a break. What's even worse is that if the Supreme Court finds rules in favor of the truth, saying that Trump, in fact, did not have the authority to create taxes, that is, under the Constitution, the authority of Congress. And so if they overturn it on that basis, the people who have paid these tariffs have to then sue the government in civil court. So you'll know, Trump, exactly how much people paid, because they'll give you a bill for it, just in case you didn't keep the records. And so he says, we're screwed if the Supreme Court strikes down the tariffs that he has unilaterally imposed on most of the rest of the world. He said it'd be a complete mess, almost impossible for our country to pay. It may not be possible, but if it were, it would be dollars that would be so large that it would take many years to figure out what number we're talking about, even who, when, and where to pay. This is a reminder. This guy drove a half dozen casinos bankrupt because he doesn't know what he's doing. So he's just stole the money from people, and now he can't figure out who he has to repay if he's told that he's got to get it back. And again, this is money that has been taken out of the voluntary market, if you will, and sent to Washington. When is that ever a good thing? When are conservatives actually going to wake up to what are they trying to conserve anyway? I just can't figure that out. I think conservatism is absolutely dead in this country. There isn't anything that they want to conserve. They don't want to conserve the Constitution. They don't want to conserve the rule of law. They don't want to conserve the separation of powers. There's nothing that they want to conserve. They don't even want to conserve money. It's like spend, spend, spend. Give him a pat on the back whenever he spends a lot of money. So he can't tell who he's taxed. And only a Democrat and a failed casino owner would think that taxes are prosperity. During the arguments, Chief Justice John Roberts characterized the tariffs as taxes on Americans. And that's key. He maintains that they're not taxes on Americans, that it's just magic money. You know, the Democrats have their modern monetary theory, MMT, which I always call the money, the magic money tree. You know, we don't have to worry about deficits. It's just, you know, it's just money that we make up and everything. Trump is the same way. He's a supply side modern monetary theorist, right? Now, this magic tariff money just comes from nowhere and nobody's paying it. Isn't that great? And so it just appeared. And, you know, the amazing thing about it, too, is that he's already come up with multiple ways that he wants to spend this bonanza that he calls it. You know, first he's going to hand out a big check to all Americans. Then he thinks about it a little bit longer and he says, no, let's give it all to military spending. I can't make up his mind on that either. So then we get to Fed Chair Powell, who holds a press conference and says, I'm under criminal investigation. And he says, this is not about any crime that has actually been committed. He said, this is about the fact that Trump wants control over the Federal Reserve and he wants to push me out. I think, and many other people think, that this is going to actually backfire on Trump. Remember, he went to a lot of trouble to try to get Lisa Cook out. Why? Well, because the Fed chair himself has a lot of influence, but he's not the only guy that votes as to whether or not to raise or lower interest rates. He is the face of this group of invisible people that are back there that we don't see. And yet it's the governors that are actually voting on that. That's why it was so important for Trump to get rid of Lisa Cook, who's going to oppose his ideas on what he thought the economy needed. His central planning. They've got their own central plans, and they are political in terms of their opposition to Trump. So he wanted to get rid of her. Well, what happens is that Chairman Powell, who Trump put into place, Trump made him the chair of the Federal Reserve. Well, his term ends in May. So he's gone as the chair. However, he can remain as one of the governors and still have a vote on all of these economic issues, you know, whether they're going to do quantitative easing or they're going to lower interest rates or whatever, or raise interest rates. He will still be there as a governor until 2028. Typically, that's not what happens. Typically, if somebody is the Fed chair, once their term is up, they leave the Federal Reserve. They don't stick around as a demoted, get demoted from chair to back to one of the governors. But he might stick around, in which case Trump was looking at, well, I get to replace the Fed chair and I get to replace a governor position. No, this guy might stay there to be a thorn in your side if you make him angry, which is what Trump has a history of doing. Federal prosecutors are conducting a criminal investigation. The Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell focused on the extraordinarily excessive $2.5 billion renovation. I don't know how you justify that, except we're talking about Washington, the district of criminals and the district of corruption and the district of debt, really. He had also testified to Congress. So that's a part of it as well. Now, the person who's bringing these charges is Fox News commentator Jeanine Pirro, whatever, who is now Judge Jeanine, who is now a prosecutor there in D.C., all of it very political. Powell said the probe is a result of longstanding frustration by Trump over the Fed's refusal to cut interest rates as quickly and as much as the president has demanded. And so, again, this is thuggish, corrupt lawfare by Trump, as we've seen over and over again. He said the threat of criminal charges are a consequence of the Federal Reserve setting interest rates based on our best assessment of what will serve the public, rather than following the preferences of the president. This is about whether the Fed will be able to continue to set interest rates based on evidence and economic conditions, or whether instead monetary policy will be directed by political pressure or intimidation. So he threw down the gauntlet and went public. Now, Trump is denying that this is coming from him, that it is political, but everybody knows what the truth is. Powell said, this is not about my testimony last year, and it's not about the renovation of the Federal Reserve buildings. I mean, quite frankly, it should be. I think that looks incredible. I can't conceive of how you could spend $2.5 billion just to renovate a building. They're not even talking about building it. I mean, you're talking about building it. It'd be hard to spend $2.5 billion building a building, but he's just doing renovation. Must be some expensive chair railing he's putting up there.
Maybe Trump mandated that it all needed to be gold.
That's right. Yeah, they're going to clean out Fort Knox for this. It's not about Congress's oversight role. The Fed, through testimony and other public disclosures, made every effort to keep Congress informed about the renovation project, he said. So those are pretexts. I have deep respect for the rule of law, for the accountability of our democracy, he said. No one, certainly not the chair of the Federal Reserve, is above the law, but this unprecedented action should be seen in the broader context of the administration's threats and ongoing pressure. So he is ready to fight Trump. I think it's backfired here. I have served at the Federal Reserve under four administrations, Republican and Democrat alike. And he was actually appointed by Trump as chair. A DOJ spokesman in a statement to CNBC, without saying the comment was about Powell, said the Attorney General has instructed her U.S. attorneys to prioritize investigating any abuse of taxpayer dollars. So, yeah, this is just like a DOGE thing, right?
Is there anything that the government does that isn't an abuse of taxpayer? They're going to be busy for an inordinately long time.
Yeah, that's
they're never
right.
going to stop.
Yeah, I remember there was an organization around Tea Party time where Citizens Against Government Waste. And I said, you could just drop that W right off of there because everything the government does is a waste and abuse and fraud.
Yeah, if you start going through this line by line, you will never get finished. You really just got to bust out the chainsaw and start cutting this out wholesale.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, so the bottom line is that it rocked the markets as usual. It set all new precedents as usual. And we're not really sure where this is going to go. But Trump is right saying this is the most per square foot of any project that you see in the history of the world. Probably that might be the first true thing that Trump has said. I mean, it truly is a scandal that they would spend that kind of money on a renovation. But it tells you something about their attitude towards us, doesn't it? The utter contempt that they have for the little guys. This probe came to light nearly 6 months after Representative Anna Paulina Luna first said that she'd referred Powell to the DOJ for potential crimes of perjury and false statements to federal officials in connection with his testimony about the renovation project for the Fed's headquarters. And again, this is another one of these. It is very much like lawfare. It's kind of what they did to Trump. This is, I think it's wrong. I think it needs to be stopped as to whether it is an unusual crime for things that typically happen in the district of criminals. I don't think it rises to anything that's unusual, anything that is not being done by any of the rest of them. It's very much like what Trump did when he came after the mortgage loans for Lisa Cook and for Letitia James, saying that you put down that this is going to be for your own personal use, and yet you never lived in this, you used it as income property, or in the case of James, she rented it out to a family member and did it at a discounted rate. So I think she's actually pretty safe on that. But nevertheless, this is another one of these kind of process crimes that they're looking at, which is the same game that they did to Trump. He just decided he's going to do it back to them and double down. Public opinion, however, doesn't support that kind of thing. And Trump should understand that. It wasn't that people said, well, you shouldn't do that, Trump, because I love Trump. We just looked at it and we said, that's wrong to do that to somebody. And we all know that's wrong to do it to somebody. Even somebody as personally reprehensible as Donald Trump, it's still wrong to do it to them. And that's the thing that got him elected. So what does he think it's going to do when he does this to Jerome Powell? Maybe Jerome Powell will be the next president. Anyway, so when he starts looking at people who are possible replacements for Powell, guess what? He's got one of the guys that is at, is this Blackstone or BlackRock? We need to keep these things separate because they are actually different here. BlackRock, not Blackstone, but BlackRock. And Larry Fink, of course, is in line to get special favored treatment with the Panama Canal. Remember that? I mean, that was like ancient history in terms of Trump's conquests and intimidations abroad. And yet, so he's got a Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, who was a Soros high-ranking assistant, right? And then he wants to make, as chairman of the Fed, BlackRock guy. Okay. And, of course, there's three other people that he's looking at. But doesn't that send off any warning flags for the conservatives? I mean, as soon as you have some of these back and forth fights about ICE and the people, oh, look, they're paid protesters from Soros. You got some organization that's fed by another organization, all these different shell corporations of Soros. And they're giving money to some of these people or helping them in some way or the other. And I get it. I don't like that. I reject that. But again, it's the fact that they're so selective about when they look at this. They don't care about the fact that Soros and Scott Bessent were the two who broke the Bank of England. And so he puts them in there to break the Bank of America, I guess, or Central Bank of America, to break the dollar or whatever. But they don't care. They don't care about his close relationship with BlackRock and Larry Fink either. And all of this. And so some of the other people, so this guy, BlackRock, is the chief investment officer of Global Fixed Income. And he's going to be interviewed as well. So you'll have the Soros guy, as I call him, Scott Bessent. He's Soros's soy boy. We'll be interviewing him along with Susie Wiles and Donald Trump for a job interview. When it comes to getting rid of the Fed chair, not being able to wait another 5 months to get rid of him. Got to get rid of him now with lawfare. Scott Bessent allegedly told, this is Axios reporting it as a scoop, Bessent told Trump that investigation of the Fed chair is going to create a mess. Well, that's putting it mildly. He told Trump late Sunday that the federal investigation into Jerome Powell, the Fed Reserve chair, made a mess and it could be very bad for financial markets. Two sources familiar with the call told Axios, Bessent's worries about the financial fallout were somewhat realized on Monday when the dollar dropped as bond yields and the price of gold rose amid worries about potential political interference. The secretary isn't happy and he let the president know it, said one source who talked to Axios. Again, it's Jean Pirro's office in D.C. launching the probe. The White House officials say, well, she didn't give a heads up to the Treasury. She just did it on her own. Well, she knows what Trump wants. Senior administration officials told Axios they believe the idea for the criminal investigation was launched partly at the urging of the FHA's director, Bill Pulte. This guy is a snake if ever there was one. He's the one who's going back with AI, going back through decades of people's real estate history, trying to find a process crime for them. And he denied that on Bloomberg TV. But who knows? Anyway, many people call this a boneheaded move because it is yet again, it is another boneheaded move from a boneheaded president. This is lawfare at its worst, said a former Dallas Fed president, Richard Fisher. The Justice Department's threat to criminally indict Powell may even make it harder for Trump to replace Powell with a loyalist. And it'll probably, as I said before, keep Powell there long after his term as chair expires. Typically, after they are no longer the chair, they leave. And so Trump would have had that place to replace, but now he's not going to have that as well. So, again, about 3% up for gold, over $4,600, and silver spiked another 8% rounding up on Monday. This is all a reaction to reality. And this is not a temporary thing. Because there's a lot of different things that are pushing up the price of gold and silver. In addition to the economic issues that the U.S. is having, all of the countries are having economic issues. And the Western financial system, as referenced by the fiat dollar, by the SWIFT clearance process and all the rest of the stuff, has been thoroughly discredited by the Russian sanctions and other things like that. So nobody trusts this criminal government. I think it was just... the fifth oil tanker has been seized. Again, this is amazing. Civil asset forfeiture on such a grand scale in the name of the war on drugs. And it was never legal to start with. And so nobody trusts this illegal criminal operation that we have here called America anymore. And so everybody is looking to create a different financial system and everybody is stocking up on gold. the central banks are stocking up on gold, and you've got BRICS stocking up on gold. You've got the people who are looking at creating another alternative approach here in the United States with stablecoin. The Commerce Secretary, Lucky Lutnick, and his Tether stablecoin, they're looking at backing up the stablecoin, not with dollars, but with a real stable coin, gold. And so there's a lot of people that are accumulating and stacking gold, big institutional buyers. And then there's all the issues about war, domestic as well as international. All of these are things that are going to continue to drive gold and silver up. And of course, it also gets you some independence away from the Federal Reserve as they continue to devalue the dollar, which has already lost more than 99% of its purchasing power since the Federal Reserve was created 112 years ago now. This is an outrageous act, which from any other president would be a shocker, said former Fed Vice Chair Alan Blinder in an email. Fed watchers say that Trump's attack on the institution could make officials who are on the fence about a rate cut reluctant to be seen to do so at the president's bidding. So even if they were looking at the economic data and they thought the rates should be cut, they don't want to be seen to be caving to the president. So they might vote against it for political reasons. It blows back exactly, it's like his invasion of Venezuela. It is going to blow back big time on him, I think. Overall, this is counterproductive to the president's agenda, and it almost forces the Federal Open Market Committee to be more hawkish in order to resist political pressure, or to be seen to resist political pressure. Every living former Fed chair and a bipartisan group of former Treasury secretaries and White House economists have issued a statement yesterday defending Powell from the unprecedented attempt to use prosecutorial attacks to undermine Fed independence. And again, you see Fed independence. The whole structure of the Federal Reserve is just corrupt from the get-go. And we need to look to see how we make this country independent from the Fed. So I'm all for it in that regard, but not the way they mean independence. The White House has sought to distance Trump from the DOJ probe. They said, and of course, you know, Powell is not going to ride off into the sunset. He's going to stay there so he can be a thorn in Trump's side. Well, he may not ride off into the sunset, but I think the gold and silver are going to go to the moon. So that's that's the takeaway from this. And again, I'll just tell you, it's one thing that you can do is most of these policies that we look at, there's not too many things that we can do to actually guard against or to utilize it for our own benefit. But when we look at the economic policies of the federal government and of the Federal Reserve, there are things that we can do individually to try to mitigate that or even profit from it. And the gradual accumulation of gold and silver, as Tony Arterburn makes possible with Wise Wolf Gold, and you can let him know that we come to him through davidknight.gold. If you do that, that's a really wise move for your future, because all of the fundamentals that have been there now for several years are not changing. They're all getting worse. And so we see the new high of $4,600 for gold, and even higher, 86 for silver, and an even bigger jump in terms of percentage yesterday, because they're not going to audit the Fed. They may look at the building cost. They may audit the building cost of the Federal Reserve building, but they're not going to audit what the Fed does, and they're not going to look at how much gold is in Fort Knox, because the Fed is just a cesspool of organized crime, just like the federal government itself. Nothing about that is going to change. And then when we look at what Trump is going to do in order to try to make homes more affordable, David Bahnsen, who was wealth management firm, the Bahnsen Group, and they've got, I forget how many billions of dollars they've got under management, but I've interviewed David, and he was saying that they've got the wrong target. He said, Trump is saying he wants to ban large institutional investors from buying single-family homes. We don't want to. This really has played into the concerns that we all have that you hear from the World Economic Forum all the time. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy, right? And so you see these large investment firms getting into buying up single-family homes. It's like, aha, We know what that's about. Well, the problem is that if you actually look at the numbers, it's still not very big. You know, it'd be a good thing maybe to you know, look at this and say, you know what, legally could we do about this? I don't think there's any authority under the Constitution to do anything about it whatsoever. And you have to ask yourself, how do we justify saying that a certain group of people can't participate in a market? That makes no sense at all. But whether it's going to help from an economic standpoint is really what David Bahnsen is talking about here. And clearly, when you look at what Soros's soy boy, Scott Bessent, said at the Economic Club of Minnesota last week, he said, yeah, we're looking at this. He goes, as somebody who's been in markets for 40 years, markets are made on the margin, and so we're pushing out the marginal buyer. But we haven't exactly decided on the exact contours. In other words, translation, Trump hasn't given this any thought as to how it's actually going to work. This is just sheer demagoguery, folks. We haven't really thought about the contours of this. In other words, how do we define somebody who's an institutional investor, he said? Is it somebody who owns a dozen homes? Is it two dozen homes? Are we going to push out the small investor who goes in and buys a few houses and maybe makes some rental houses and single family homes or something like that? What are we really going to do about this? And that's a really troubling, that's a troubling issue, as well as the legal aspects of this and the legal precedents. As a matter of fact, the person who was asking him the question pointed out to the Soros soy boy, Scott Bessent, pointed out that the White House is aligning itself with Senator Elizabeth Warren on these policies. Yet another example of how Trump is a Northeastern liberal Democrat, a tax and spend pedophile. That's who the guy is. Always has been, always will be. And so David Bahnsen said, it's incredibly easy to empirically establish that three of the markets that have been some of the biggest home price appreciation in America, Bend, Oregon, Providence, Rhode Island, and San Jose, California, have zero institutional ownership. Three of the worst performing markets have the highest institutional ownership. In other words, the value of the houses have not gone up. So institutions have invested in areas that were not good areas to invest in. He said, to the extent that we're talking about total institutional ownership, people that own over 1,000 homes, and this is including multifamily, which is what the president and Secretary Bessent have not included. So he says, so there's more institutional investing in apartment buildings, and they're not even including them. They're not talking about apartment buildings. But in single family, it is 0.4% of the housing stock. Now, some will say, no, you can't look at it in terms of total ownership because the marginal buyer is the new buyer, okay? He said, well, the new buyer at the peak year was 3%. And if you look at the largest institutional owner, a company called Blackstone, which is repeatedly confused with BlackRock, it makes for all kinds of fallacious statements on social media. By the way, I've seen these. DC Drano, the guy, the Zionist, the hardcore Zionist who was one of the biggest guys up front about this. Remember when Trump released, so-called released the Epstein documents to some of these MAGA influencers? And DC Drano was one of the worst in terms of cheering it and talking about what he had there. And this guy is putting out all kinds of false information about what's happening in the real estate market and confusing Blackstone with BlackRock. Perfect example of that. He said Blackstone owns 0.06%, about 60 to 63,000 homes through conduits and subsidiaries in a country that has 85 million homes. So we're talking about something that is not even remotely rational. He said when he says that we have to pick the contours, like, well, do we want them to allow, do we want to allow them to buy 20 homes? Or do we allow them to buy 100 homes? That is nothing but central planning. And that is, the problem is, you know, you want to talk about affordability? The problem with affordability is that the federal government is impoverishing people through their policies and through the devaluation of the currency and through taxes and through regulation. And the inflation that is the devaluation. If you want to do something about affordability, you got to go back to the basic issues. And the most basic issue is the federal debt. which Trump himself is responsible for blowing up more than anybody else. He made that initial kick in 2020. Biden kept it up, and so is Trump. And that's the real issue with affordability. So we look at these things like, we're going to put 1 year cap of 10% on credit card rates. And we're going to tell people to get a 50-year mortgage. And we're going to say, you can't have institutional investors buying homes. None of this is a solution. I mean, this is as stupid as Gerald Ford's win buttons. Whip inflation now. Remember that? He put out these buttons that said win, and it was stood for whip inflation now. So you wear that, and problem is solved. And that's the kind of idiotic demagoguery that is and slogan, you know, jingoism and everything that Trump is involved in. When you look at his economic remedies, they're laughable, absolutely laughable, and unconstitutional and illegal to boot. Everything about this is wrong. As David Monson is saying, it really goes back to supply, and it really goes back to income and wealth in general. That's the real issue. It's not home ownership, more than anything, is a reflection of prosperity or poverty. And that's what's happening. Our government is making us poor. And all of this nonsense that Trump is doing is just like putting a new coat of paint on his bankrupt casino. Nothing has changed at all. Look, settle for something that is real, something that you can start to accumulate gradually, to try to protect yourself and to mitigate the harm that's going to be done to all of us. I mean, you're going to be harmed with this even if you own gold and silver. We're all going to be harmed. We're all harmed by excessive government regulation, by central planning, by inflation, all the rest of this stuff. But you can try to mitigate some of that, again, by getting into gold and silver. Tony Arterburn can help you at Wise Wolf. And again, let him know that you're coming through us through davidknight.gold. That's all I can tell you. And when we look at this stuff, it's just unbelievable how ridiculous it is. So that's the Federal Reserve War. And when we come back, we're going to take a look at the foreign wars that we have everywhere, because we've got a whole bunch of them stacked up. A little bit of updates about all these different ones: war with Russia, war with Iran, war with Greenland, war with Venezuela. That's the common thread with Trump. Everywhere he goes to war with everybody. He creates conflict where there wasn't any conflict. He says there's emergencies when there aren't emergencies, and then his policies create an emergency. And so we're going to talk about all that when we come back. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
You're listening to The David Knight Show. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
APS Radio delivers multiple channels of music right to your mobile device. Get the APS Radio app today and listen wherever you go.
And before we get back to the news, I just want to say real quickly a thank you to our donors, which we call our producers, because they are the ones who bring this program to you. And I want to thank the people on Zelle who have made contributions. Sally D, Rose G, Mitchell M, Robert A, Sean S, William R, Kelly K, Lyndon H, Mary M, John S, Michael L, Maurice W, William W, Janice W, and that was the last day of the year, so that was already counted in there. But thank you anyway. Thank you so much, all of you. And I don't have the list of the people who sent things by mail, but we will get that tomorrow. But I want to thank many of you, and I really do appreciate your support. And that's what keeps this program going. And we're about halfway through the month, so we had a very good month last month. As usual, January really starts off slow because people got a lot of bills to pay. But thank you to those of you who have been faithful supporters. It's always the same names that we see over and over again. So let's talk a little bit about the foreign wars. And of course, there's many of them to choose from. How do we start? We got small updates on a lot of different ones. For instance, in Russia, we had a couple of interesting updates in terms of, you know, one of the things that has really emboldened Trump and the U.S. military industrial complex is the superiority of our complex equipment. And yes, it is superior, but it can still be shot down. A good example of this is what is happening in the in Ukraine. We have an F-16 shot down in Ukraine with the anti-aircraft missiles, the S-300s. In an interview, they said the U.S. supplied aircraft was the most interesting target. They said their missile battery fired two missiles at the F-16. The first one damaged the aircraft. The second one delivered the final blow. They said this is a guy who was a commander being interviewed on Russian TV. He said, "We were tracking it, anticipating it. The enemy boasted these planes were indestructible. As it turns out, they fall from the sky just like the rest of them." And that's the key issue. That was an issue. We were on the right side of this in World War II. In World War II, we had the Germans who had extremely complex and advanced planes. They had jet planes and things like that, but they didn't have very many of them. And they had very advanced Panzer tanks, but they didn't have nearly as many of them as our much simpler, cheaper Sherman tanks. And that type of imbalance is even more accentuated now with drone warfare and things like that. So it's amazing to me to see how the U.S. military industrial complex is writing checks that it can't cash in so many different areas. But when we talk about high-tech stuff, it's not even like we have a monopoly on high-tech stuff anymore. We don't have hypersonic missiles. They are building ships that are they say are going to be launching pads for hypersonic missiles and things like that that we don't have. So we don't have the ships and we don't have the missiles yet. But yeah, just wait. And if we don't have a war and have the military destroyed, those will come along in due time. Meanwhile, the Russians and the Chinese do have hypersonic missiles. They have the Oreshnik missile. They just destroyed a Ukrainian facility that builds planes in the Ukraine. They were actually building old planes, MiG-29 jets, as well as some Western-supplied F-16s are being worked on at the facility. The Oreshnik hypersonic ballistic missile system blew up the plant. They produce long and medium-range strike drones that are being used for strikes against Russian targets deep inside the territory of Russia. They said the strike hit production workshops, facilities holding finished drones, and the infrastructure at the plant's airfield. Kiev has not commented on the scope of the damage yet, but the mayor confirmed at the time that a piece of critical infrastructure had been hit. And so, again, the wars that we're starting here are very... And it's not just that. It's also the precedent of this kidnapping. As I pointed out last week, you got people in Russia like Alexander Dugin, a hardcore, let's go take all of Ukraine type of thing. And when he saw his comments about the kidnapping of Maduro, we should be doing that to Zelensky. And within a couple of days, you see the UK defense minister say, we need to go kidnap Putin. You know, Trump's policies are not making us safer. You know, when you hear all this stuff about national security, it doesn't have anything to do with national safety. These national security interests, these people who start the wars, like the CIA, like the Pentagon, they're not doing things that make us safer. Far from it. Trump's policies and his precedents are making the world a much more dangerous place. Now everybody's saying, yeah, they did that. We could do that too, or at least try it. So Moscow said the Friday bombardment was with the Reshnik hypersonic missile. Was a response to the attacks against Putin's home in the Novgorod region, which the CIA is saying didn't happen. I don't know. I mean, when you got Putin versus the CIA, I don't know who to believe anymore. An old KGB guy, and you got the current leadership of the CIA. I don't trust either one of them. I wouldn't believe anything either one of them says. So, anyway, Russia first used the Reshnik hypersonic missile in late 2024, targeting a Ukrainian defense industry facility at Dnieper. At the time, Putin said Reshnik missiles traveled 10 times the speed of sound and could not be intercepted by any existing air defenses, and they actually showed that. So that takes us to Iran. You know, Trump is already getting briefings on military strike options for Iran as the protest deaths soar. And I look at this and I think, so is this guy going to snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory? Why would you interfere with this? It only strengthens the hands of the Ayatollahs for you to say that we're going to jump in on this. And it has been very significant pushback that's there. Of course, the question is that really domestic unrest, or is it something that is being pushed by the U.S. and Israel? And I'm sure that they had some of a hand in that as well. The New York Times and others are confirming that Trump has recently been briefed on a series of new military strike options targeting Iran. Buildings and even mosques have been burned, regardless of who is doing this. I mean, if this is organic and grassroots, or if it is some kind of an operation by the U.S. and Israel, this is still happening there. A lot of buildings torched, cars torched, police officials reportedly shot and stabbed. An internet blackout across the country. They've just completely shut down the entire internet there. So it's very hard to get any information out of there that is reliable. It's not reliable under normal circumstances. Starlink terminals are said to be smuggled into the country during the 2022 wave of protests. Trump, during Friday's meeting of oil executives, again warned Iranian leadership to kill protesters. Not to kill protesters, I should say. Maybe he should tell that to ICE. Yeah, don't kill protesters. As a matter of fact, while I'm talking about that, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it today because I spent the last two or three days on it. Gets me really upset to go to social media. I told Karen this morning, I said, you know, when I look at the hatred coming out of conservatives for people and people writing comments on Rumble saying, you know, well, I think she should be killed, you know, basically because she's got a wife or whatever. And just the pure hatred, the tribal hatred that is there is really astounding. You know, we look at it and Christ said, if you, you've heard, thou shalt not kill. But if you look at somebody with hatred in your heart, you've committed murder in your heart already. Well, these people out there saying, I voted for this, kill them. You know, I mean, this is way beyond a private death wish that you got for somebody that is out there. I mean, they're publicly calling for this. And the sad thing about it is, it not only shows the moral condition of America, but it shows how willing and anxious both the left and the right are in terms of wanting to kill people. You know, the conservatives, in terms of their rabid defense of this murder, are looking just exactly like Antifa out there. This is what a sheriff out of Michigan had to say about the shooting.
What would you, and obviously this is 2020 hindsight, but how do you think you would have handled that situation with Renee Good, her car blocking the street? What do you think should have been done?
Well, if I was there, and again, you're right, it's hindsight, but I wouldn't have stood in front of the car. And you give verbal commands. If the car is turning away, my question is, what crime was committed? Protesting? I mean, you saw what happened to the George Floyd protest during the 2020 and out of Hennepin County, Minneapolis, Minnesota. We had 40 protests that summer here. We didn't arrest people that were blocking the street. We didn't arrest people who were just completely upset. This is part of the process. This is what law enforcement deals with. So I would have kept on verbal commands. You can take the context of the situation. She didn't appear to be a threat, although she's protesting. I get it. She can amp people up. It doesn't matter. That's not justification for deadly force. And then the force continuum that all law enforcement is required to follow. As escalation goes up, we go up. As it goes down, we go down. Instantaneously, the burden falls on law enforcement. And I'm going to tell you, for law enforcement out there watching that shooting, you can't take pride in what just happened. Yes, a vehicle can be used as a weapon. It wasn't used as a weapon that day. It's what the American people saw. Tires turned to the right. She's getting out. She's like, I'm not mad at you. I'm not mad at you. I don't care if she was there all day. You take the things that are in context at that moment and you make a decision. Was that decision to use deadly force the best decision? I don't think the American people think that, and I certainly don't think that.
Yeah, and that is Sheriff Chris Swanson out of Michigan. You know, we can have some really good sheriffs. I have to stand for election, and there are some really good sheriffs in America. Unfortunately, there's some really bad law enforcement, and when we centralize it, when you look at Trump criticizing what's going on in Iran, how is that different than what you want to do with ICE? It's unbelievable hypocrisy for him to complain about what's happening in Iran when you look at what he is doing and deliberately provoking, deliberately creating chaos. I wonder if the police in Iran wear masks. Do they get all hyped up in military uniforms and armed to the teeth? So they go out and, you know, point. As a matter of fact, there's a video. I haven't even shown it, but there's another video that has gone viral where you've got a middle-aged woman standing there and she's, you know, yelling at the police, protesting. She is redressing her grievances publicly, peacefully, as is specifically protected under the Constitution. And he's got a pepper ball rifle in his hand. He puts that down. He pulls out a real pistol and puts it right in her face. This is why, you know, when I did the thing about Trump burning the Constitution and Apocalypse Now and you know, all that stuff, I had that same thing done by a robot cop. And these guys have been trained as robots, dangerous robots, to do something like that. So more than 544 people have been killed over the past 15 days during anti-government demonstrations. So the scale of this is much bigger than anything that's going on with ICE or these leftist pro-immigration people. However, it's not the scale that concerns me. It's the same principle that you're looking at here, including 8 children, according to the Human Rights Activist News Agency. They said, Iran is looking at freedom, perhaps like never before, said Trump. And the USA stands ready to help, and we're locked and loaded, and we're ready to go kill more people for you. So, yeah, just stay out of it for once. Every time you get into something, you make it worse. If Trump were to actually kick off yet more U.S. military action in the Middle East, this time against a large nation like Iran, which would hold the serious potential for escalating into a full-blown conflict, it would likely prove deeply unpopular among his base. Broadly, the American public would likely not be on board either. Well, I don't know so much. I think we've gotten to the point now where the delusion of MAGA is so strong, the ability to doublethink is so strong. They may hate this policy. They may hate American adventurism abroad. They may hate the idea of America being the world's policeman and an excessive use of force policeman at that. But they will still give excuses to Trump, just like they did for the vaccine that they hate. Even Iranian state TV is reporting from the morgue, they said, where a large number of body bags can be seen. Goldman Sachs said that this U.S. intervention in and of itself would have an impact on oil, gold, and across the markets. Yeah, what do you think is going to be yet another thing that's going to affect the price of gold in a positive way? Iran, unlike the 2022 protests that were around social liberties, this episode looks to be triggered by economic paralysis with inflation spiking and the sudden collapse of the Iranian currency in late December. This is a harbinger of things to come, to not just to Iran and not just to some third world countries, but it's something that's going to happen to in Western Europe and in the United States as well. And I think this is why they're being so provocative. I think this is why they're ramping up the federal army of cops, because they know that this type of unrest could easily come to this country as well. What can potentially add oil to the fire is if foreign interference continues to get talked up, with the U.S. signaling the threat of potential intervention. Oil and gold crept up as the Iranian unrest unfold. And Iranian businesses have in many cases been forced to suspend all activity because of the shutdown of the internet, said to be so severe that even the banking system is not operating. And you can't even get money out of ATMs. Again, a harbinger of what could easily happen in America and Western Europe. Nobody is immune to that, especially right now. We are in a very, very precarious situation globally with all the countries. Leadership in Tehran may have made things worse for itself with the decision to block internet access. Clashes with police have grown more intense and violent after they've done that. Iranian foreign minister said the protests were brought under control on Saturday, and then blamed Israel and the United States. And again, I believe that there is probably some truth to that. As a matter of fact, Brian Shalhavi has a very long report about the history of the Shah's family. Mohammad Reza Pahlavi was the guy that was installed by the CIA and that was pushed out. And of course, his son is still around, looks a good bit like him, actually. Is now trying to make his bid to be Shah of Iran again, to take over Iran. And now he has had some support from the Netanyahu government, of course. The Americans who basically put the Shah in completely ignored him. As after the Shah died, he declared himself to be king or Shah, whatever the official title is, of Iran, and not even the U.S. government recognized him. But now you have a big move by Israel to recognize him, and so CIA and Mossad may wind up trying to put a Shah back in control of Iran. We'll have to wait and see what really happens with that. But again, this is many people don't understand the history of Iran prior to the takeover of the U.S. embassy. And if you see what the Shah did to people, as trained by the U.S. CIA, that is a real eye-opening experience to see that our own government pushes the kinds of things that the Iranian Shah did to his own people. And so they have distanced themselves from him in the past, but now it seems like all is forgiven. And who knows, maybe it's going to be another attempt by the U.S. government to try to shore up the petrodollar. Look, that would be perfectly in line with what the technocracy wants. You know, the technocracy back in the 1930s not only talked about having a united hemisphere from Greenland down to the Galapagos, as I pointed out, but they also said we need to get rid of money. And you've seen Elon Musk talk about this as well. We need to have an exchange, an economy that is based on energy used. And this feeds into all of this social credit monitoring of people and how much energy you use and how much you consume and all the rest of this stuff. And so it's kind of interesting to see, even if you kind of think of it as a Venn diagram, to see the overlap between the green people out there. Of course, Elon Musk made all of his money as a green grifter. And so it's kind of interesting to see the overlap of these draconian measures, these green MacGuffins that they want to use to sell complete surveillance and control of all of our economic activity, what we eat, what we wear, whether we travel or not, where we live, all of this, that all harkens back to the technocracy. And you can see a lot of these policies being brought back with that. Denmark, meanwhile, as we get to we get the green light. I guess we'll let it be sung in here by Donnie Jr. and Charlie. So, well, we now have Congressman Randy Fine of Florida, the guy who has decided that, along with the Israeli billionaire Shlomo, that we need to get rid of the First Amendment. We should not have any free speech. And he was one who was pushing very hard for DeSantis to go to Israel and to sign a bill for Florida in Israel to make it criminal to criticize the Israeli government. Now he's saying that Denmark hasn't treated them well. Well, I don't think you're treating Americans too well, Randy. He writes a plan to make Greenland the 51st state. And he is sucking up to and supporting Trump in this quixotic quest, which is, again, when you look at it, I don't know how this makes any sense at all, except that it is part of the goal of the technocracy to create what they called a technate, everything from in the Western Hemisphere. There have been some extreme ideas discussed, including a military takeover, also cash payments to residents. Yeah, we don't have to worry about the federal deficit. We can give $100,000 to each person in Greenland to say that they want to be American tax slaves in the future. Always the government hands it out with one hand and takes it back with the other. So, yeah, we're going to give you $100,000, and then you're going to start paying income taxes, and we'll take it back in no time at all. So, again, going to use bribery, going to use threats, going to use blackmail. This is our government. It's always the way they operate. And so it's Randy Fine of Florida wants to make a Greenland America's 51st state. I think it is in the world's interest for the U.S. to exert sovereignty over Greenland, said Fine. Well, it is certainly in Fine's interest to copy everything that Donald Trump says.
The question is it in Greenland's interest? Because yeah. That's who it's going to be impacting.
No, we don't care about that. I mean, you know, when you look at when you look at our country here, we don't really care what anybody else wants. I mean, we have a pirate country here. You know, we just, it's mine. I'm taking it because I can. Congress, he said, still have to make it a state, but it simply authorized the president to do what he's doing and say that Congress stands behind him. So he is introducing legislation to support Trump and all this. And Secretary Marco Rubio confirmed that he has now scheduled a meeting. People from Denmark and Greenland have been begging for a meeting from Marco Rubio since Trump started talking about Greenland about a year ago. Said, can we talk? And he's finally ready to talk, apparently, under them. And so, again, Congress on the Constitution has the power to add states to the Union. But again, is this in our interest? Is it in Greenland's interest? Well, when we look at what is happening in Venezuela, this is something that is, again, backfiring. It's very much like looking at this whole thing unfold. It hasn't been that long since the kidnapping of Maduro, and there have been contradictory statements and lies coming from the Trump administration about every aspect of this, beginning with saying we're blowing up these boats because they've got fentanyl on them, and then they ignore that. And then they say, well, it's cocaine, and it's coming to the United States, but it wasn't coming to the United States. And then saying they were being attacked by these people. They were never attacked by any of these boats. And so every aspect of this has been one lie after the other. And to say that basically we have done a decapitation strike, well, that means that the guy then was the head of the government, right? Except they're not going to acknowledge him as head. They're going to pretend that he was a drug dealer and not the president of Venezuela. Why not the president of Venezuela? Well, because the election was rigged, and we know the person who really won the election was either Machado, who was kicked off the ballot because it looked like she was going to win, or Gonzalez. But Trump is not going to put either one of them back in power. He's going to run the country himself or give it to Marco Rubio to be viceroy. None of this holds up to any scrutiny. It's completely inconsistent. And so the question is this over oil? Well, he had all the oil executives with him on Friday, and the Exxon executive publicly said that this doesn't make any economic sense for them to get involved, and that they can't really, that it is uninvestable. because of the chaos in Venezuela. So that was the Exxon CEO, Darren Woods. Well, Trump is going to exclude him out of any of this stuff. He's going to throw massive amounts of money, just like he wants to bribe people in Greenland to vote to become American. He wants to send massive, and we're talking about a lot more than $100,000 each. We're talking about probably tens of billions of dollars to each of these companies to go in and build infrastructure in Venezuela. And yet the when the Exxon CEO tells the truth about it, Trump says, well, I didn't like Exxon's response, he said. I'll probably be inclined to keep Exxon out. I didn't like their response. They're playing too cute, says Trump. So again, if you flatter him, you do whatever he wants, then you're going to get massive subsidies from him. But if you cross him, he's going to do everything he can to destroy you. Trump has argued that Venezuela's vast oil reserves could help revive its economy while also benefiting U.S. consumers and energy companies. In a recent interview, he said he wants companies to commit at least $100 billion to, quote, rebuild the whole oil infrastructure in the country. But they say, well, you know, we just can't count on the U.S. remaining there, and the political situation is in flux. We don't know that you're going to be able to stay there, even if you have a commitment. You know, the person who replaces Trump may not have a commitment to this. And even if they do have a commitment, they may not be able to make it happen. You know, just because we wanted to control Afghanistan, we still got thrown out of there. And so, yet again, we see these policies that are constantly shifting the narratives where he draws a line in the sand and then he changes it again. We were told that taking the oil in Venezuela was to go after Cuba, that we needed to starve Cuba into submission, their economy, by cutting off oil from Venezuela. So now Trump is going to allow Mexico to provide oil to Cuba, despite his vow to cut off the supply. This is very much like what we saw with the AI chips from NVIDIA. No, you can't. We can't let that high tech go to China. Not at all. Then he talks to some corporations, and he talks to Jensen Huang or whatever. And the next thing you know, he's going to say, well, okay, you can sell the chips to China, but you give a cut to me. There is no, it's just like what Scott Bessel was saying about stopping institutional investment in single-family homes. We haven't really figured out the contours of this. In other words, we don't know what the details are. And they don't know what the details are on any of this stuff. But he doesn't. It's not just that the tactics are changing, but it completely contradicts his own strategy. He's done this over and over again with tariffs, and he's doing it yet again. We got some comments here, Travis.
Yes, we do.
The New York Times is reporting Scott Adams passed away.
Yeah.
So sorry to hear that. Yeah. Yeah, especially because of the comments that he was making just a few weeks ago. So sorry to hear that. His comments about his relationship with Christ. So sorry to hear that.
Hopefully he made that decision in the end.
Yeah, we don't know. We never know about anybody, do we? It's between the person and God, and we can't really know what is happening in somebody's heart.
Yeah. We have Steve Evs. He says, what if you violate one of the hundreds of unconstitutional executive orders? Is it a crime?
Good point.
They'll definitely treat it like one, that's for sure.
Oh, they can make you suffer, you know, with the fines and other things like that. I mean, it's what we saw through COVID, things like that. Yes.
And Original Babe says, the funny thing is, Trump quoted that snake poem several times. Doesn't anyone see he was telling everyone he is the snake and you let him in?
I know. That was my comment. I remember at InfoWars when he was doing that. And Darren McBreen was working on a piece and it had that as part of it. I said, that's pretty amazing. I said, it's obvious that he's the snake, you know. They didn't see it that way. I did see it that way. I agree with you. Yeah.
All right. We have Will
Just as nature. Box. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, yeah. Just its nature. Will Tubox says, happy anniversary, Sir Knight.
Well, thank you very much. That's it has been a happy 46 years. I got to think, you know, it's like the numbers are flying by so fast. So
time moves quick.
Yes.
PA Patriot 14. I'm assuming that's Pennsylvania. It says 13% interest rate in 1980 is less than a 6% interest rate today due to the principal of the home itself.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's amazing to see what has happened to the average price of a single family home. Yeah, that's the other part of it as well. And it's not, look, the cost of homes, just like the cost of cars, is not purely inflation. It's inflation plus regulation. They have done all kinds of things to drive up the price of homes, just like they have for cars. And so much of the affordability issue is tied to inflation, but it's also tied to oppressive government regulations. I mean, you know, you got your 1.5 gallon toilets in there. I don't know that that costs any more now than it did before, but they micromanage everything. They micromanage the design of light bulbs, of toilets, of gas cans. Everything is micromanaged. And that, of course, raises the price of things as well. But, and many of these things have no reason to be the way they are. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have High Boost saying, I pay property tax. I am in debtor's jail.
Yeah, that's circulating around quite a bit. There's a lot of different proposals out there to look at that. They know that's a hot spot for people, and it absolutely is. And you can never get rid of the property tax. Again, every time we talk about property tax, I'm reminded of Donald Rainwater in Indiana, a guy who ran as an independent, as a libertarian, actually. And he had a very good approach, and it's something that people need to hear. It's something people need to give to their state representatives to think about. His approach that he suggested when he's running for governor in Indiana, he said, let's say that's going to be 7%, something like that, and make it like a sales tax. And so you pay it once when you buy the house, and you can fold it into the 30-year mortgage, or you can pay like 1% a year for 7 years and you're done, and no more taxes, and you freeze it that way, because it's a real issue for all of us as we get to retirement. You know, how, you know, maybe you start to get your mortgage paid off after 30 years, but you still can't get rid of the sales tax. It's something people really need to take a look at. And I think it is a real injustice the way this thing is set up, and it needs to be changed.
Yeah. We have General MacGuffin says the minds are captured and public consciousness is fabricated in the public government schools.
Mm-hmm.
It's a well-oiled machine.
Yeah, that's right. That's where it begins. And as a matter of fact, the UN is on a crusade to shut down homeschooling, of course, everywhere, but especially now in the UK. I was actually surprised that it was allowed in the UK, because UK has gotten to be very controlling, very authoritarian. I was surprised to see that homeschooling is even allowed there. But the UN has got its own designs on that. And we'll talk about that when we come back after the break, because I want to talk about one thing that Trump did that I think is really good. He's getting us out of a lot of these international organizations, and UNESCO is one of those, and these people have been pushing the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child for quite some time. I've played the videos I did. When was that? Was that like 2006, 2007 or something like that? It's been almost 20 years now.
Yeah, it's in that time frame.
Yeah, and there's an organization that Michael Ferris, who did Homeschool Legal Defense Association, also had the parentalrights.org, where they were trying to get a short, just a couple of sentences there in the Constitution to firm up the right of parents to educate their own children. That is just basic, and yet it is despised by the UN because they understand how vital it is for them to control children's minds from an early age. Yeah.
And finally, we have Wally Walrus. He says they have essentially locked people like me out of the housing market, David.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that is, it is difficult. And we've seen this. I remember seeing this in the UK. They were talking about how people who didn't get in a few years ago, now with all the rapid increase in prices, as well as interest rates, it is very difficult to break into the housing market if you're not already in it. And again, you know, the kinds of things that Trump is talking about are not going to help. They really aren't. They're going to ignore the fundamental problems that have made it unaffordable for people. And I'm sorry that you're in that situation. We're going to take a quick break, folks. And when we come back, we are going to talk about some of these organizations that hopefully we will really get out of. We'll be right back. Let's grab some music here. Thank you.
listening to The David Knight Show.
Well, when we talk about central planning of the economy, nothing says it, the folly of it, better than what we've seen with all the green grifting that is out there. Here's another example. You know, we just had Ford take a $19 billion write-down. I mean, they could have had a couple of Federal Reserve buildings for that. $19 billion off of their electric stuff that they're doing. They had investments in electric vehicles as well as battery facilities. Unfortunately, Ford is now going to be repurposing this battery facility into one of these facilities that makes the really, really big and dangerous lithium batteries, the ones they call the battery energy storage systems, right? BESS. And BESS is the worst way to go forward with all this stuff. When you think about all of the issues with electric battery fires that we've had, when you look at that, and you scale this up to something that's big enough to back up the grid, that is just a disaster waiting to happen. And so I hate to see that happening. But GM has now taken a $6 billion charge just a couple of weeks after Ford took a $19 billion charge because they were following the government's push, not what the consumer wanted. And also, eventually reality catches up to people.
Sorry, yeah. Just briefly, but when we're talking about the BESS, they're trying to put them in places, you know, small towns around America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they'll give you some kind of credit for it. They'll probably give you like, oh, look, this will benefit the community. We're going to give you a handout. Are they going to be there when this thing eventually catches fire and dumps chemicals all into your environment?
Yeah. Probably remember,
not. You're probably going to pay for that out of pocket.
That's right. We've had these things typically put in remote areas or something, but now they're talking to the TVA around here, the Tennessee Valley Authority, wants to put them in areas that are heavily wooded, have a large population of houses nearby. It's a disaster waiting to happen. And, you know, it's one of the other things we talk about, gold and silver, the industrial uses of silver. People have mentioned that, many of, and just in case you're not aware of it, you know, the Samsung battery that is there, it sells at a premium because for a car, it's got a couple of pounds of silver in it, in this particular battery, but their battery is solid state. And apparently doesn't have the, from what I've heard anyway, that of course that could be PR from the company, but it appears to be a way to get around this volatility that we see in these lithium batteries that have some kind of liquid lithium in them. I'm not really, I don't know anything about the batteries at all, but what they're saying is that they charge much, much, much faster than any of these other batteries. And I'm talking about orders of magnitude faster, that they don't have the fire issue. And that they have a battery life that is, well, they have longer range, they have a shorter charging time, and then, you know, doesn't have the fire hazard that the lithium batteries do, and it has a life that they claim is twice as long as the lithium batteries. All of that is good, except, and of course, all of that is going to really be a squeeze on the price of silver. So another interesting thing to think about here. Meanwhile, as GM is pulling back from this folly, they announced that they're following Ford's much larger move in December, that when they wrote down nearly $20 billion, and it's $19.5 billion, canceling several different EV programs. And remember that all this, when GM and Ford go bankrupt, remember the German companies are already seeing the handwriting on the wall because they all jumped into the electric vehicle thing. They were pushed into it. And it's always the case with central planning. You get some of the people like Elon Musk who are in there from the beginning, and they're making out like bandits because they're pushing this idiotic program that's there. And of course, GM's got a CEO, Mary Barra, who has not been serving them well. They decided they were going to focus primarily on fully electric vehicles, not even with hybrids. And hybrids are selling, but the full EV vehicles are not selling at all. And a big part of this is the fact that the government ended the $7,500 federal EV tax credit. Again, consumers knew this didn't make any sense unless it was heavily subsidized by taxpayers. And so now they ended the subsidy, and so now that is a real drain for these companies. Trump has withdrawn the U.S. now from 66 international organizations. And I agree with this. I think this is a good thing. If we can only withdraw from the federal government, that'd be even better. On Wednesday, last week. He said, we're withdrawing the United States from international organizations, conventions, and treaties that are contrary to the interests of the United States. So what does this actually include? The affected international organizations are 31 entities affiliated with the UN. Unfortunately, we're not getting out of the UN itself. And Trump will still attend Davos as well. As a matter of fact, he's going to be there, and Zelensky is going to be there. And it's like the next week or so. It's always in January. And so Davos is coming up. I don't really believe, for all these reasons, we're going to stay in the UN. We're going to, and he keeps going to Davos. I don't buy the idea that he's an anti-globalist, frankly. He certainly is not anti-technocracy, and there's a lot of overlap between those agendas there. And look at the last time he was at Davos. right after he comes back, you know, we get the declaration from his HHS pharmaceutical executive that he put in there, Alex Azar, declared that we had a pandemic, even though they only claimed that there were six cases in all of the United States. He declared a pandemic nevertheless, and it kicked off all that nonsense right after Trump came back from Davos. The memo actually follows up from an executive order that Trump signed February the 4th last year to withdraw the U.S. from the UN Human Rights Council and from UNESCO and from the environmental fraud of the IPCC that was there. The State Department announced that the U.S. is also withdrawing from UNESCO. And again, these are the people in the UN that are pushing the education agenda, pushing to attack homeschools and that type of thing. On Trump's first day back in office, he signed executive orders withdrawing the U.S. from the World Health Organization and the Paris Climate Agreement, although it took a while for these things to go into effect. I've said for the longest time that the Paris Climate Agreement was not a legitimate treaty. I know they've got a prevarication. They want to try to make a case that because of prior treaties, we were pulled into this thing. I think you could fight that. I mean, look at how many times Trump has gone against the black letter of the Constitution and the law, done what he wanted to do, and then, you know, took it to court. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But I think there was a much better case to be made for getting out of the Paris Climate Accord to say that we were never even in it. Nevertheless, in July 2025, Rubio and HHS Secretary RFK Jr. announced that the U.S. formally rejected the WHO's 2024 amendments to the international health regulations, ensuring that there would be no force, no effect in the country. And again, this is something that we've followed. I'm trying to remember the guy who has really been the point man on this. I've interviewed him a couple of times. His name is escaping me. Maybe you remember it, Travis. But he has been on this all over the details of this, and the devils are in the detail. And so the IHR, as well as the pandemic treaty, it's very, very good that we are not in this thing. So that's a big win right there. Trump administration actions, including pausing funding for the World Trade Organization, forcing the UN's International Maritime Organization to pause a global tax on shipping. Why should we have to pay a global tax to the UN? What are they going to do with the money? They're going to create a global army? What are they going to do? Again, first time formally denouncing the UN's 2030 agenda for sustainable development. So those are all good things.
And we'll hope that James Roguski?
Yes, you're right.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Thanks to
apologies to James for forgetting his name. I just plead my age.
that is thanks to Cliffy Kim in the chat.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, James Roguski has really investigated this thing. He was taking the lead on all this and in the details. And so hopefully, I don't know if his take is that this is for real or not, but hopefully it is for real. I mean, it's hard to tell when we have any of these pronouncements if they are actually real or what's going to happen with them. But hopefully that is going to be real, that we will not be affected by any of that. Despite these actions, Trump has also expressed support for strengthened UN. For example, in an address to the UN General Assembly this last September, he implied support for more powerful UN systems, declaring that the globalist body has such tremendous potential, he said. All they seem to do, however, is write really strongly worded letters and then never follow up that letter. It's empty words, and empty words don't solve wars, he said. And I guess, evidently, they don't have any way to stop him from starting these wars, do they? Maybe they take that global shipping tax and use it to create a U.N. army. Would that be a good thing? No. He's also repeatedly expressed support for NATO, which is a subsidiary of the U.N., as the New American points out, including for Article 5, which obliges the U.S. to go to war if another NATO member is attacked. And again, when we talk about war with Russia and Ukraine, Zelensky, this little horn who wants to try to drag us into World War III by whatever means he can, by hook or by crook, the idea that we're going to put boots on the ground, that we're going to guarantee their security for whatever the number of years is, 15 years, 50 years, whatever they are negotiating, I wouldn't want to guarantee their security for 15 minutes, quite frankly. But just remember when Trump told MAGA that he was going to get out of NATO, I think that was really just a way to get NATO countries to buy more U.S. weapons. He was complaining for the most part, yeah, we need to get out. You guys aren't even spending 2% of your budget, your military budget, of your GDP. You're not even spending 2%. So you need to get that up. And they got it up. And then what do you wind up with? They do a military buildup so they can go into Ukraine and start World War III. Good job. So legislation has already been introduced in Congress to get the U.S. out of the entire U.N. system. It's called the Disengaging Entirely from the U.N. Debacle. The acronym for that is Defund. And that is sponsored by Chip Roy and Senator Mike Lee. If enacted, the Defund Act would fully withdraw the U.S. from all U.N. entities, completely defund the U.N., and prevent the U.S. president from unilaterally rejoining it. And then there is the WHO Withdrawal Act, sponsored by Andy Biggs, that would codify Trump's order withdrawing the U.S. from the WHO. So it would go from an executive order to an actual law. Tom Tiffany would withdraw the U.S. from the World Trade Organization. And Thomas Massey and Senator Lee have introduced the NATO Act. And they have an acronym for NATO, not a trusted organization. That's the best acronym for NATO I've seen. And that would withdraw the U.S. from NATO completely. By the way, you could have, I guess, come up with a name for the act that would spell out Gladio. To me, I think Gladio makes one of the best cases for us getting out of the U.N., Operation Gladio. And then finally, before we run out of time, I thought it was kind of interesting, Eric Von Daniken, the guy who made a fortune with Chariots of the Gods back in 1968, has died at 90. And it's kind of interesting because this guy was a Swiss hotelier and, of all places, Davos. And even as his motivation in writing Chariots of God was because he had a problem with God. He wanted to disprove God. So he wrote this book. It was he had a real issue with God. He also had a real issue with crime. He was serving time in jail. As a matter of fact, he was in jail when Chariots of the Gods became a bestseller, and he was always in trouble with the law, and he was always a fraudster. He was actually, even when confronted with his fabricated evidence in a British TV documentary, and the evidence was supposedly what he said, ancient pots that he thought had come to us from aliens far beyond, it turned out that they were actually almost new pots, and he just dismissed that. Said, well, it doesn't change my theory at all. He was actually given the Ig Nobel Prize for Literature. He was the first recipient of it in 1991, something that they hand out to people who sell false narratives. where a lot of this alien lore has come from, is somebody like that. Have a good day. Thank you for joining us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.